position number 22659, wheel 7.
Three of them are taped interview with George Wright in home in Perth, Western Australia, on the 29th of the 11th, 2001, for the Imperial War Museum in London, and the interviewer is John Bannister. So you were helping to zero the sights of the rifles that you were to use.
Yeah.
What sort of equipment did you have? Was it, how would you rate the equipment that you had at that time?
My own personal eyes. That's what you had to do. And then there were armourers there who were carrying out the corrections.
Was it good equipment?
Oh, well, as far as the personal weapons go, it wasn't much. It was a matter of a hammer and a punch and then a centre punch to lock the sight. Yeah. And it was experience and capability which played a big part.
What was the condition of the weaponry that you were to use? Was it good weaponry?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, God, yes. Mind you,
people talk of things being outdated. Was this a situation that you experienced?
Oh, rifles and that, they're all Australian made. And, well, there were no...
People talk of the weaponry that they were to use to have been quite outdated, particularly at the early stages of the war. Had the weaponry been updated since then?
Oh, there could have been with such things as mortars. And we're still using the same old grenades. And...
Had you been in contact with the American soldiers at all in Australia?
No. I once had a ride in a jeep in the Middle East, in a driven by a Yank.
What was the general attitude towards the Americans, do you think?
Oh, quite friendly. Of course, we realised we'd get a lot of backing from them. And they did have forces close by, you know, in the port on the north coast of New Guinea, Gona or Buna, down around that area. Yeah.
So you would arrive in New Guinea in early August, I understand, about the 12th, you're in Port Moresby.
Yeah.
Would that be right?
Well, I think so.
What were your first impressions of the place?
Well, you just had to take it, and that's all there was. It, there are a few wharves and things like that. No more than you could expect, having seen a few other places on the other side of the world. And, of course, when we got out in the bush a bit, which we did a little bit, staged a couple of days, I think, you sort of got used to it. Yeah, it was all... it wasn't a smooth place, because when you looked over the one way, you know, the damn great hills that went to be mountains. That's...
What was the atmosphere of concern at that particular time, do you think?
Well, we weren't happy. Well, then, we could see there was going to be a real war on. And everyone had to do their job. Yes, it's the local population too. They weren't too bad, the native population, and of course they had a small force, and there was part of it, the local white settlers were in it, and I think they were mainly on the supply lines and interpretation, guides. Yeah. Because you didn't always come in close contact with these people.
What are the weather conditions for you at that time? What do you think of them?
Well, down around the coast, it was like this. Yeah. And then, of course, as you got inland a bit, it could probably rain at night, be clear in the day or something like that. You had plenty of rain, and of course, took ground with it. Of course, as you got up in the mountains, it got worse. That blooming slippery and that. To go over some places, they used to make a step track. Stakes, drive in stakes, and then drop saplings in so you get your feet into them. And these would be on for a few days, and they'd finish up with puddles of mud at the steps, knee deep. Or thereabouts.
This was the staircase going up.
Yeah.
The foot of the Owen Stanley Ranges.
The golden stairs.
All right, we'll talk about the golden stairs in a minute. Can you give us a description of the camp that you were staying before you were to head off there?
Where up?
No. In Port Moresby before you were to leave.
Oh.
The conditions of the place.
Well, it was just no special conveniences. We had all our own gear and very few buildings. Not that I saw them, but there must have been some kitchen work there. Because we weren't cooking our meals, so when we had cooked meals, they were done for us. So, that stage, I wasn't watching that side of it much, because I was two IC of a company, I think. Yeah. No real big organised countries or barracks, although there was some barracks there for the Papua New Guinea Rifles, they called them. They were New Guinea Papuan troops with white officers.
What was their reputation?
Hmm?
What was their reputation, the Papuan troops?
Oh, quite good. Yeah. They had quite a good, obliging reputation. Friendly people. And even in recent years, there's been a couple of them. What's left of them come over here. I don't know whether you saw them, did you?
At the parade, a couple of them came over, I understand.
Yeah.
Football
level. Yeah, well, I wasn't then, I was crook at the time.
What were you hearing of the conditions at places like Buna and Kokoda. Kokoda had been taken already, July
29th. No. Well,
have you heard about that?
I didn't get as far as Kokoda.
But had you heard that the Japanese had taken Kokoda before you was to lead up the Kokoda track?
No, I don't think so. No, not that I recall. So we went up the track as fast as we could. And
had you heard what situation the 39th were in?
What situation? Well, they had some battles, not, I don't think they're really large ones. Of course, we had, we supplied officers and NCOs to them. Not only us, of course, other units did too. But,
so tell us then about preparation to go up the Kokoda track. Were you given any sort of briefing at all?
Well, the briefing for up the track, it really started over in on the Brisbane line, because we're being exercised or landing on the rough ground and that in the jungle areas as much as possible. They had a rough idea where we were going, but we weren't just dumped over there without any training. It was that's what the Brisbane line finally did for us.
Okay, well, as you were to head off up the track, and you were marching up these steps.
Yeah.
How had the training actually prepared you for what you were to experience?
I was buggered. No, it was a hard job. As a matter of fact, I still carry some of the marks from my left knee. I gave it a twist then, and right since then, it's had a bit since. And the other side of the knee is crooked as well now. Have you seen the picture of it, of the stairs, golden stairs? Oh, yeah.
So how what were you carrying? What did you have to take with you?
Well, we carried, I think it was 9 days' rations. And of course, in those days, they had to be manhandled up there, or the aircraft hadn't really been introduced until later on. It was dumped up the track at I can't think of it at the moment. And that was supposed to be shared amongst a section. Well, of course, I was a platoon commander at the time, and I had to carry the 9 days. Well, I didn't force it on the troops, and we used their so happened, just, you know, the troops, let the boss carry it, you see. So I carried the 9 bloody days until we finally had to use it. But,
did you have any assistance from the natives at this time?
Yes. They were carrying a light bit of stuff up, but no, particularly used as for information purposes, plus for bringing out wounded, stretcher bearers. And they're very good.
As I understand, you were to head off up the track, get to the top of the hill, and get to a place called Myola.
Yeah.
Well, tell us about that. What was that?
Oh, well, the temple was really like Myola, and although there wasn't that much water there, it was a sort of a swampy bit of ground and covered quite an area, and it was used as a dumping ground for rations later on, and instead of them to carry so much, it was dumped there, and some of it was picked up and brought up to us if we'd moved on, you see. But
how long did it take for you to get there once you'd started up the track?
Oh, God.
Roughly.
No, I could only guess. Oh, I should say, anything up to 7 days.
Can you describe the average day to us? When did it start?
It started at dawn. And, of course, there's no cooked meal, because you couldn't cook it, you see. There was
why not?
Every prospect of it raining and things like that. And also, we didn't have fuel for it. And we were eating cold stuff most of the time.
So what was the cold stuff that you were eating?
Biscuits, tinned cheese, bully beef, and what else was there? What a great selection. And
what was the morale of the troops like at this time?
Well, under the circumstances, I think pretty good. Yeah. Well, I knew that everyone had to do their job, and it was done. Except there was the odd one that you could not rely upon.
Why not?
Well, they just didn't, well, put it this way, they just didn't have the constitution.
What sort of constitution did a chap need to have to be on the Kokoda track and making a good show of it?
Well, he wanted to be have confidence in himself and prepare to work. And it's prepared to work and also prepared to help his mates as they would be to help him. So it's they just had to behave themselves, that's what it was about, it was the job they were doing, or they had to do. And well, there was only the odd one. Yeah.
What was the worst thing about moving up towards Myola?
Well, having to climb up the Bloomin' Hills. And you get out the hill and you have to go down the other side. You know, that went on just about every day.
How many hours would you be marching?
Was I marching?
Well.
Oh, God. I suppose I might have lasted about 6 hours a day. You know, it was 5, 6, oh, it might be more than that, but You weren't going very fast, because we're going up bloody hills like that, or down like you see, and ploughing through mud and that.
And, what was the sense of urgency?
Well, it was urgent to get a force and stop the Jap, and it wasn't until we had contact with the 39th fellows that we really knew the actual location, how far they'd come through. Eh? Because Jap could move through the rough country, you know. Of course, he didn't carry as many rations as we did. That made a big difference, I think. Yeah.
On approaching Myola, I understand there was a bit of a hold-up. The rations didn't come through properly. Do you recall that situation?
That could have been with the weather in the aircraft. See, when we got to Myola, they were dropping it. And of course, when we got to Myola, the ground in a lot of places was sloppy, and rations were dropped from aircraft, and unfortunately, a lot of them were lost due to the fact that they landed and got submerged or something, and you couldn't pick them up, and if you did pick them up, well, it could be dangerous, because the possibility of tins having been fractured, and you get ptomaine poison, would it be a food poisoning at any rate? And there was quite a lot of that, and about the only things that wasn't crook, I think, was biscuits and cheese. The cheese used to be in tins.
On your way up, where did you camp? Where would you sleep?
Where'd you sleep? Oh, Christ.
Were there villages that you stopped in?
Well, if you came to a village, but it was usually by the side of the track, or where places, if possible, had been selected and were cleared of it.
What would you sleep on?
Oh, you had a ground sheet, which was a rubberized piece of fabric. I suppose you know what a ground sheet is, do you?
Would it keep you dry at night time?
If you're lucky, if you're able to get yourself above the level of the water. Mind you, occasionally it didn't rain at night. But
the impression is that it would have been fairly difficult to be marching along wet all the time.
Oh, God, yes. Yeah. If it was wet all the time, and there was this, at that stage, Dubbin wasn't easily to be obtained. You know what Dubbin is?
The waterproofing... Yeah. Shoe polish, boot polish.
Yeah, like a heavy grease. And of course, you might go, we might have gone for a week sometimes. Well, you didn't get your boots off. When you finally did get your boots off, the skin came off your feet. And you'd had it. That, of course, that happened when we got under to a few people, when we got under pressure. But where possible, take your boots off at night and give them a chance to dry out. And of course, it makes sorting too, you get your dubbing in it if you can. There was a dubbing in those days, well, with the British Army, there was always plenty of it, what I could make of it. But we didn't have so much of it. I think they had the impression that being out in Australia doesn't get wet. Yeah, that's.
As I understand, you would have met up with the 39th at Isruava.
Yeah, Isruava. Oh, yeah.
That was on the 28th of August. Leading up to this point, what had you heard or what did you know about what was going on further up the track?
Oh, we heard the odd piece that where they'd contacted Japs, but it's a bit. It's a bit hard to say. Oh, yeah. Oh, we did hear that the 39th had had contact and had some casualties. But, it made us more wary.
What was your initial experience then of Japanese on Kokoda Track?
On the Kokoda Track? Well, actually, I didn't see a great deal of them. But, I know, I was 2IC, that was it, with Frank Sublett. Yeah, I was 2IC of a company with Frank Sublett, and it was when we got well up, just about to Kokoda. Frank Sublett had sent the rest of the company off, more or less aiming to gain contact with the Japs, and he saw that I wasn't doing much, being 2IC the company as he, and George, he said, you can go over there, and he pointed out the direction, and see what you can find out over there, and we'll be back by a certain time, which I just forget what it was now. But at any rate, I said, all right. Well, I said, I want to take somebody with me to make contact. Oh, yeah, take you. Well, there was only the CSM, Bob Jones, R.E.A. Jones, my batman, and who was the other fella? Oh, no. My batman, Bob Jones, and myself. The three of us. We went off, and you got off about 300 yards, I think it was, and it was a bit clear. And I always carried a rifle. I used to be abused for it, because I wasn't supposed to, you see, being an officer. I always carried a rifle and a pistol on my backside. And, of course, if you carried a pistol, you're a marked man, you see, as an officer. Yeah. But I could use a rifle, so. We got out a couple hundred yards, must have been, I suppose, in the bush. I saw a couple of Japs. and one stopped. So I just slipped behind a tree and told Bob Jones to get there and the bat. Oh, I didn't take the batman out there with me. I left him back at a point. That was it. He was a bit of a weak fellow. And I knocked this chap over.